When the revelation had first dawned on Mrs. Eddy, she did not know how she could explain it, but she states that after a short time she arose and decided, "I can tell this, and the world can know what it means." And from that time on, I demonstrated it. A pupil found. Once Mrs. Eddy had firmly determined the science she had discovered could be taught, she had to face the problem of how. Quote, "To know how the students could mentally practice on the sick puzzled me," she said. "I had not by any material means or method demonstrated on the sick the power of divine science, and did not believe that my students at the start could reach my purely mental attitude of healing," unquote. But, as had become her habit, she trusted love, her own right mind, to guide her, and launched out. Late in 1866, she took Hiram Crafts as her first pupil. She taught him the healing art. Soon others came. Since Mrs. Eddy did not claim to be a teacher of religion, her early students regarded her method as simply a lucrative pathway to health without medicine, for themselves and their patients. As it became clear that her religious views were entwined with her method, the receptive students, in Bancroft's words, quote, "learned that their success or failure in healing depended on the purity of their lives as well as on the instruction she gave us," unquote. When these earliest pupils proved they could earn a living healing the sick by what she taught, a demand arose for her teaching. Mrs. Eddy saw this development as providential and began forming classes. In these classes she used the handwritten copies of Science of Man, on which she had been working since late 1866. In this question-and-answer type instruction, we glimpse the abstract, radical way in which Mrs. Eddy taught as she introduced her pupils to the timeless, flawless, incorporeal universe of reality, of life in and of spirit. We here present a few pertinent fundamental lights from her instruction, which will serve to explain the deep impression made on the students. She taught from Science of Man in all her classes, long after Science and Health was published. Imbued with these teachings, the students went forth and healed. It has been estimated, as will be documented later, that between 1866 and 1996, more than 2 million healings had resulted from the teaching of Science of Man, together with the teaching in her textbook and her preaching. Science of Man. The extracts presented here have been taken at random. For complete text of Science of Man, see Essays and Other Footsteps, page 179 to 227. Page 215. Understanding is God. Page 186. If you are becoming what is required of you, then you are a law to yourself. See also Science and Health, page 442. Page 198. Question. When teaching this truth, is the learner first to understand he is a principle and not a person, and secondly, that life, the principle outside of his body, is himself? Answer. Certainly. And this will commence to take him into intelligence and away from the error of his belief that life is in matter, and is that error which holds him from the understanding of this principle of science, and that error which holds man from understanding God in truth, and which has hitherto explained him a belief, a person, and error. Christ demonstrated this truth when he reproduced his body from its eternal principle, and called the body of his disciples a belief, a ghost, for example, a belief and illusion. His body he held in truth, and held it in science, immortal as the phenomena of its principle. In other words, the idea of the principle and the shadow of himself, which was the principle and substance. This was its scientific creation by the Father, principle. And understanding this science, he could demonstrate his control over belief which is called matter, and heal the body, or belief, which was sick through this error, that life and intelligence was in their body. Holding his body in science, he had no weight in it, for no error of substance in matter was there. Hence he could take it over the wave and control all conditions of belief. There are no conditions of matter. If there had been, he could never have walked upon the wave, multiplied the loaves, etc. But this he could do in science, understanding the principle. For he, for example, the principle and father, which was this principle, were one. Page 227. You, my students, are soul and not body, are God and not man. Page 217. The soul is you, and you are soul. Therefore you are not mortal man. This dream called life in matter must be broken up, and every one of us will awaken. Let us then begin today, by the aid of science, to understand man, and thus commence to regain harmony and immortality by this understanding. Page 224. The body is sensationless. Man is shadow, and there is no sensation in a shadow. God is his substance. Man is the image and likeness of God. Man is shadow. God is the substance or soul of man, and soul is not sick, and its shadow or body is not sick. But to mortal mind, and there is no mortal mind, for mind is immortal. This is the statement of science and the truth of being that destroys its error and annihilates all the positions of personal sense. Page 179. Question. What is matter? Answer. Matter, held as a shadow, is the idea of God. But matter, held as substance, is a belief and error. From the references we have taken so far, we see how Mrs. Eddy constantly went out from the divine standpoint, from the standpoint of mind's allness. Her spiritual senses continually moved in God's grooves of science. Page 195. Question. How can man understand himself a principle after so long believing himself a person? Answer. By learning this truth of science. For science alone can teach a principle. It cannot be learned of a belief. Question. How can we be a principle when we are a belief? Answer. We are a principle because we are immortal. But we cannot hold intelligence in principle and in a belief at the same time. So we hold, believe, that intelligence is in matter or our body, and have to suffer the effect of this error until the error dies and we waken outside of it, or else learn of science, thus awakening and save the suffering. We must understand principle in order to hold ourselves in it, and if we are in it, we can draw others there, for if we understand it, we can explain it. Page 190. We must work to obtain a principle and to demonstrate it. Praying for the understanding of music would never give it. Praying for wisdom never moved this principle. But striving for it, for example, learning it, does give it. Therefore, we are not only to seek, but to strive for wisdom, by which the demonstration of healing the sick is obtained in science. Page 197. The practical application or art of applying this science to the idea man, so that he may be affected by it, is first to leave your own belief or body. Then you will be in principle, and there be able to speak to another in this principle, in which immortality controls the body. Take yourself utterly away from all thought of his complaints or their locality in matter, and, looking away from all beliefs of man, attach your wisdom to the principle which speaks to the principle. For like can only speak to like. Author's note. Mrs. Eddy taught that mind is the power that forms the image. We do not see an object directly. We see an image on the retina of the eye, which is the image the mind has formed. We determine what that image means. She gives an illustration of this in her article, Love Your Enemies. Quote, "Can you see an enemy, except you first formulate this enemy, and then look upon the object of your own conception?" Unquote. You can accept what you see out there as just an image in mind, or you can decide it actually exists out there, and that it is substantial, forgetting that it is coming to you for life, and you give it all the life it has, as Mrs. Eddy told a student regarding error. Physical scientists, at Mrs. Eddy's time, did not realize that everything we are aware of is an image in mind. Therefore they thought what they saw was solid matter, and they tried to determine where it came from, what it was made of, its component parts, atoms, molecules, etc., when all the time what is seen and what we are aware of is never anything but an object in mind composed of the qualities and characteristics of mind. Quote, "From the infinite elements of the one mind emanate all form, color, quality, and quantity, and these are mental, both primarily and secondarily. Mortal mind inverts the true likeness and confers animal names and natures upon its own misconceptions." Page 194. Question, "Is man a principle or a belief?" Answer, "Wisdom created man, and wisdom is a principle. And a principle creates its idea, but never a belief. Therefore man was the likeness of God, its immortal and eternal principle. But belief says man is a person, and holds life in the idea, or man." Page 197. Question, "How should we proceed to destroy a belief?" Answer, "Your creation is to be the creation of wisdom when it created the idea of truth, which is the body, or man. When the intelligence begins to explain the principle, this is being born again, which is necessary to establish the kingdom of heaven, which is the reign of understanding. This first formation in principle and out of belief is as a blade of grass springing up by degrees. The understanding grows into truth." Christian Science Treatment, page 187. Question, "What arguments am I to use with error?" Answer, "The arguments that science opposes to it, that happiness is not found in it, that health is not found in it, and that these belong to matter or sense, is the belief and error you must put under your feet. If a patient comes to you with a belief, consumption, for instance, you are to sit calmly and triumphantly by him, so filled yourself with the understanding that nothing is here and that they are only dreaming, that your atmosphere of soul will be to them like the sunlight that melts away the darkness. There is no discord because there is no truth in discord, and no discord in truth. Do not address your thoughts for a moment to their bodies, as you mentally argue down their belief, but take yourself, the soul, to destroy this error of life, sensation, and substance in matter, to your own belief as much as in you lies. Physician, heal thyself. Know that you cannot be mesmerized to see a sick man or a discordant condition, so that your patient may be conscious of the effect of soul upon him. For this principle brings harmony with it, and thus destroys the error of sense." As the final edition of Science and Health admonishes, speak the truth to every form of error. Begin with fear always, and talk it down. Then take away its image called inflammation, and then destroy the belief that made this fear. If it was a cold that caused it, argue down this belief, or if grief, argue down this, or if hereditary tubercles, give this a rebuke, for you know there is no sensation or substance in matter. then how are you to get pain, tubercles, or inflammation in shadows? You cannot. You must assure the patient that nothing ails his lungs, for you know science holds man and every formation of man immortal, and this is the principle of man, because it is the truth of him. So you can safely tell him this, and if you get them to believe it, they are cured, and if you get them to understand it, they can never have this again. Page 206. Soul throws off body, and this body is man, just as substance throws off its shadow. This is the science of man, and on this principle soul can control man, and if controlled, thus he is immortal. Page 185. The sick have only to awaken from this dream of life in matter, of pain and disease in matter, yea, the sensation in matter that you call personal sense, to realize themselves well. But to break up this illusion requires much growth on your part. You are not in the body, hence you have not in reality to make this passage. But the dream of life says that you are, and you are looking and listening to this error and this dream. Then let it be enough to break this fatal spell of belief that would gather you where you are not, to know that all inharmony is error, and that the soul which is you cannot dwell in error. Turn then from the persuasion of error that says, I am disease that can make man mortal in spite of soul, and listen to the words of wisdom that said, I am the resurrection and the life. This did not mean the raising of a dead man, but destroying a lifeless belief, so that the immortal man can be seen. Page 201. Error is this belief that we live in matter. Therefore this body is an error, a sensuous human concept. And as Jesus named it, a ghost to be given up, when we understand our immortality and learn to live in substance instead of shadow, in life instead of death, where alone we do live in truth. The leading error. In teaching this science, which is the leading error to be attacked? Answer: the first error of material birth. For example, the belief that man made you and life was ever born into matter or the body. This belief you are to assail with the opposite truth, that all life is principle outside of matter. Page 209. When we ask the body for pleasure, it is an error. Error is belief, and belief error. God never created it, but all that worketh a lie was made after the creation of God was finished, and fashioned after this sort, a belief of pleasure in matter. This led to sexual intercourse, and this belief of man and woman mingling brought forth another belief, and this was that man was a creator, and this error brought sin, sickness, and death. Author's note. As we continue with these excerpts from Science of Man, and realize how totally Mrs. Eddy's teaching reversed all positions of mortal mind's beliefs and convictions, it becomes clear why she wrote, quote, until the author of this book learned the vastness of Christian Science, the fixedness of mortal illusions, and the human hatred of truth, she cherished sanguine hopes that Christian Science would meet with immediate and universal acceptance, unquote. Mrs. Eddy's recognition of our being as an infinite principle which knows itself, unfolds itself, identifies itself infinitely, governs itself, lives itself in all life, is conscious of itself, and brings its own plan to completion was a concept so infinitely vast that ages will pass before it is fully comprehended, since it requires a complete change of consciousness, a change from the human to the divine, where it is understood that all men have one mind, where harmony is the standard, where we become conscious here and now of the new heaven and the new earth. The human self must be evangelized. Her divine system enables us to become the impersonal truth, This entails more than a theoretical knowledge of what is in the textbook and her other writings. It requires overcoming the belief of sensation and pleasure in matter. It requires overcoming the belief that man is the creator of man. Hence the human hatred of truth, the uproar her teachings caused, and her subsequent necessity to hide it. But, quote, "the time cometh when the spiritual origin of man, the divine science, which ushered Jesus into human presence, will be understood and demonstrated," unquote. We consequently realize why she had to fulfill Jesus' prophecy in parable concerning the leaven which a woman took and hid in 3 measures of meal till the whole was leavened. She had to hide it, because if put out into material consciousness, it would be lost. She wrote a student, "Keep all I write closely in your heart. Few understand it yet, and if placed in matter, it is killed." Unquote. This again gives us a clue why the first edition had to be followed by 431 subsequent editions before it was in a form that would stand for all ages to come. Namely, she had to reduce the science she discovered, quote, "to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the material age in which we live," unquote. She thus fulfilled both the divine meaning of science and science humanly construed. The system she gradually wove into the text of Science and Health fulfilled her explanation. Humanly construed, and according to Webster, science is knowledge duly arranged and referred to general truths and principles on which it is founded and from which it is derived. Continuing with excerpts. Treating a Child. Page 216. If you have a child for a patient, you commence with the belief the parent transmits, and in the origin of this infant is the foundation for all error that ensues. We cannot build truth on error. You cannot say this child was created of matter. You can say in science that it never was, and this, called an infant, is but the mocking claim to an infant idea in perfect harmony. Then rule out the impostor and bring out the harmonious child. No hereditary disease, because there is no hereditary sin, and matter is neither right nor wrong. Mind only can admit this. There is no wrong to right, and God, and the idea of God, is the only reality. So dispute all else as a belief of reality only, and nothing but illusion. And in the exact ratio that you stand in the science of this truth, you will bring harmony out to the child, and the healthy and forever harmonious idea will be given in place of this sick belief. The conception, birth, sickness, and death of matter is all falsehood. It never was. And this that seemeth so is like a mountain mirage that appears such, but is only an image formed in the atmosphere of mind. And we call this image substance and reality. This concludes the excerpts from Mrs. Eddy's early work, Science of Man. Today's Changing Views. Today, the belief that matter is something solid, something other than an image in mind, that the body is something other than a sensuous human concept, is beginning to disintegrate. Mrs. Eddy pointed out that matter is not an objective state independent of the consciousness perceiving it. Quote, "Matter held as shadow is the idea of God, but matter held as substance is belief and error." Unquote. Writing in 1956, physicist Werner Heisenberg glimpsed theoretically what Mrs. Eddy was expounding nearly a century earlier. Quote, "What do we mean by speaking of an objectively existing world? This is certainly a pre-scientific notion, never questioned by ordinary man. If he sees a dog, he sees a dog, whether it sits beside him or jumps about. All these innumerable and vastly different sense impressions are united by an unconscious process in his mind to the one conception, dog. I propose to express this by saying that the mind constructs by an unconscious process invariants of perception, and that these are what ordinary man calls real things, unquote. That's from the Scientific Monthly, May 1956. When Mrs. Eddy wrote, "All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation, there is no life, truth, intelligence, nor substance in matter, and the body is nothing other than a sensuous human concept," what was she saying? Wasn't she telling us that to reckon the self, or soul, which is doing the observing, as within what it observes, is the error of the ages? The eye does not see itself. The potter is not within the clay he fashions. When we accept the one divine mind as our mind, then all that is fashioned or observed is divine, is true and real man. The hereafter, the body, not I. A typical experience reported by those who have been near death or pronounced clinically dead is a sense of being completely detached from their bodies. They often find themselves in the room, looking down on their physical body as if they were spectators. They report that this seemed perfectly natural at the time, and that they were aware of sharp but detached mental processes, observing with a mind more lucid than it had ever been in earth life, and acute hearing, even though in normal life they may not have had good hearing. According to medical records, they are later sometimes able to give accurate accounts of the actions of the medical team, readings on instruments, and other events that took place while they were unconscious or even clinically dead, unquote. They all experienced consciousness functioning perfectly without a physical body. This substantiates the point Mrs. Eddy makes that mind is the soul of all, and mind's soul is never in matter. Soul is never in the body. Mind, spirit, soul expresses itself in a spiritual body, a body that is an aggregation of spiritual ideas, forever controlled and governed by the law of life. In a recent interview with the press, Dr. Kenneth Ring, speaking of people who have passed into a temporary state of clinical death, said, quote, "These people tell of a common pattern of experience, a sense of extreme peace and well-being, a sense of being separated from the physical body. There is often a sense of encountering a beautiful, warm, brilliant light that seems to engulf and surround the individual." One individual gave this description to me. "It was eternity. It was like I was always there and would always be there, and that my life on earth was just a brief incident." From what we are told by most of those who have reported such incidents, the moment of death can be one of unparalleled beauty, peace, and comfort, a feeling of total love and total acceptance. This is possible even for those involved in horrible accidents in which they suffered injuries. Dr. Ring continues, "The typical near-death survivor emerges from his experience with a heightened sense of appreciation for life, determined to live life to the fullest. He has a sense of being reborn, and a renewed sense of individual purpose in living, even though he cannot articulate just what this purpose is. He is more reflective, and seeks to learn more about the implications of his core experience, if he had one. He feels himself to be a stronger, more self-confident person, and adjusts more easily to the vicissitudes of life. The things that he values are love and service to others. Material comforts are no longer so important. He becomes more compassionate towards others, more able to accept them unconditionally. He has achieved a sense of what is important in life and strives to live in accordance with his understanding of what matters," unquote. Mrs. Eddy on Death and Resurrection. The first death is the simple belief that matter has a beginning, and so must have an ending, that it goes out through sickness and age. The second death is the effort of sin, malicious animal magnetism, to kill us by putting out our sense of God. Jesus must have destroyed the simple belief of death time after time. But the cross, where his sense of God crossed swords with evil, malicious animal magnetism, and for a moment faltered, was the overcoming of the second death. And, as he had overcome the first death, the second death hath no power. The second death is the effort of malice to rob us of our absolute faith and pure trust in an absolute good God. Instead of being bound for the grave, we must know we are on the eternal road of life that has no sense of death. No evasion of the subject is possible. We must know that we can never die. We have to know this sometime, and now is a good time to begin. We do not need to sorrow because of the seeming death, but rather rejoice that we know the way out. Watch that you do not lose your love from the attacks of hate. Better lose life in matter than love for God and man. This is why our dear departed are better blessed than those that remain if they are returning evil for evil.